Osiris.
Hey, this is Chris Pandolfi from the infamous String Dusters, and this podcast is part of the Osiris podcast family. Osiris is a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans with conversation, commentary, and music. Osiris works in partnership with Relics. Check them out for all kinds of new music, news, and information.
Welcome to episode 139 of the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is Matt, and in just a moment, we're going to send you to an interview that RJ did with the folks from Lore Social, a new partner of Osiris. Matt and Ryan from Lore have created a really cool setlist game that you can play for this summer's shows. I think we're all going to play along here at Team HF Pod, and before the tour starts, we'll try to share our handles for that game on social media so that you can play against us, and we can all play along together. In Fish News, it looks like we're going to get a new Vita Blue album soon. Paige was apparently spotted in New Orleans over the weekend playing with Russell Batiste, who mentioned that on the stage that they have a new album coming out. So I don't know about you, but I'm really excited to hear from that band after a decade of silence. Before we go to the interview, I wanted to mention that I'm going to be at the Charlottesville Trey Show next week. I believe Jonathan's going to try to go as well. Stoked to see Ray back in action. This is going to be his first show back on stage after his surgery, so we've all been wishing him well, and should be great to see him back in action with Trey and the boys. If you are going to go to that show, let us know. Hit us up in advance. Tell us that you're going to be there. We'd love to say hi to as many people as possible, and hook you up with a sticker if you haven't gotten one yet. If you know what we look like, just go ahead and try and find us at the show. Don't be shy. As always, if you like what you're hearing here, please tell your friends about us. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. That really helps us get more attention on the show and kind of get more of you listening to us. All right, enough of me. Let's go to the interview with Matt and Ryan of Lore Social. Enjoy.
What's happening to you and me? God grant me serenity to remember who I am. 'Cause you're giving up your sanity.
Hey everyone, this is RJ. I'm here with a special guest co-host, Tom Marshall.
Hey everybody.
And we're here with Matt and Ryan, who are the co-founders of Lure Social, LureSocial.com. What's up, guys?
Hey, how's it going, RJ? Tom?
How are you? Good to see you. Good to be here.
Great to see you guys. We're here in New York on one of the hottest days of the year so far.
I melted on my way over here.
But we made it.
Melted in the subway.
But we made it.
And now we're here in a nice, cool place.
It's so nice. So, guys, thanks for coming on. And we've been talking for a long time about getting you guys on the podcast, so we're excited to finally chat.
Likewise.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about Lure, of course, but I think we always like to start with just asking people to tell our audience a little bit about your Fish journey, how you got to where you are today, your introduction to Fish. I know you guys have been seeing shows for a long time. I think people would be interested to hear just sort of when you started seeing shows and you know, memorable points along the way.
Well, I'm the lyricist for... Oh, not me.
Tom dates back pretty far, as I know.
Tom's first show was at Hampton 09. He really liked it. I don't know, Ryan or Matt, if you want to... Either you guys
go ahead. I'll start. My first show was May 20-something of 1991 at the Salisbury School in Connecticut. For me, the initiation was like what you've read about or you hear about from time to time, where there were tapes circulating with probably the same 10 songs, just in different sequences, but somehow made their way to me, and my first listen warranted, you know, going to see them live, and I don't know, 300 plus shows later, still going.
What was the crowd like at that show? Was it like sparse?
Sparse.
Amazing. Do you remember, like, is it pretty clear, like, detail-wise?
Yeah. It was like I said, it was a May day. Sunny, it was a daytime show. There were a few boarding schools who had congregated, who were invited to go to the show at the Salisbury School. I don't remember exactly which ones. But, you know, maybe there were a few hundred kids who attended along with some kind of teacher, probably the youngest, you know, shortest straw teacher who was assigned to chaperone us.
It's funny now to think about, like, yeah, let's send a bunch of 13 to 17-year-olds to a fish show.
Yeah, with supervised by, like, a 23-year-old yeah. first-year teacher. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. That sounds like a really cool school.
We should find that teacher.
Yeah, we should find that teacher. That's amazing, and that's when, I mean, they were, like you said, sort of more limited song selection, but just raging. I mean, like, playing so tightly. I don't know if it was... feels like it would have been really loud and really awesome to be there.
It was great. I remember the stage was pretty sparse, and, you know, I feel like it was ground level. It was in the outfield of a baseball diamond at the school.
Wow.
And, you know, the kids basically took up the outfield, and the teachers stood out of bounds or in the home run area. And, yeah, you know, it was but the first everybody's seen concerts, but I'd never seen one like that before. You know, Springsteen and the Stones and all the big kind of stuff that I'd seen before that. Despite the theatrics and the grandeur of all of those other shows, you know, nothing set the hook like was set that day in May of 1991.
Wow.
Fish set the hook.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So in a reversal of the metaphor. Awesome.
And Ryan, which became a double entendre for our name, Lure.
So Lure,
fish
right.
set the hook, and, you know, we caught the lure.
Yeah.
We threw out the lure, and it fish caught us in the first cast.
Yeah, what about you? Did you guys know each other at that time or no?
Not at the moment, not in the early 90s. My first show was June 1995 at Jones Beach.
Okay. Yep.
They played two shows in late June. I went to both of them. And I was in a band growing up. I still play musically. So I'm a guitarist and a keyboardist and a lead singer in a band. And I was super into music, recording, playing live, and Hoist came out just before that, and I, you know, got totally hooked and went to Jones Beach and saw those two shows, and from there on in, I was completely enamored.
And do you guys remember, maybe Matt, back to you, like what your first memorable time when you were like, this is a band I'm going to keep seeing for hundreds and hundreds of shows?
Yeah, so I after that first show in 1991, I probably didn't see them for a few months, but then the shows that I remember is like the ones that were really formative and like still to this day. In addition to that Salisbury one stick with me are the New Year's run shows in 1992, some summer shows in 93, but then quite a few in 94 where it was like, all right, now I'm all in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of those from 94 include the Beacon run, including the Friday night with the country horns.
Uh-huh.
The summer shows, and there was a three-night run, you may remember, of Big Birch, Canandaigua, and Sugarbush. A little bit of back and forth, and you kind of went Big Birch, then west to Canandaigua, then back east to Sugarbush, but some great shows. And then fast forward to the fall, of course, there was the Halloween show, and you know, Glens Falls was super memorable. Probably, I feel like, one of the longest shows, other than, like, you know.
Is that the White Album?
Yes. Yeah. But yep. That was surprisingly long.
So that was probably the first show that you and I went to, because I was just sort of,
is that right?
I was just sort of getting on tour.
Okay.
I didn't do like a lot of those like crazy ones that you just mentioned with names that I can't pronounce.
and then you know, then without question, the New Year's run of '94. In particular, you know, the Providence show was
like, yeah,
lights out. Just so memorable.
Those
are some of like the shows I remember most still to this day.
I'm supposed to drink every time I mention the Providence Bowie, because it's been mentioned so many times on the podcast. I think Big Birch, actually, that was, I think, 7/13/94. That was one of the first like tapes that I got through tape trading in, you know, probably that fall. But it was, I'll always remember those tapes. But that summer and fall were, man, they were on tour for, I mean, it seemed like the whole year in 94 at least. I didn't see my first show till fall of 95, so that was when I was like getting the tapes and wishing that I could go to shows, and I wasn't
there
yet.
They were a touring machine and just going nuts. Yeah, it was hard to catch every show, but our friend David Steinberg wrote a book about
it. Yeah, yeah.
He was out on tour with them in 94.
Yeah.
How about you, Ryan? Have you seen as many shows as your counterpart here?
I haven't hit 300 yet. The number is, I lost track approaching 200.
Uh-huh. It happens.
Yeah, it happens. I've saved most of all my ticket stubs. I can probably go back and figure it out. But
it's a perk of being in the several hundreds and, like, you lose count eventually. That's nice. Like, I think that's a rite of passage.
It is.
Like, yeah. I don't know exactly, but, you know.
I think counting to 100 was... You know, that was important, and then after that, I just realized how special the band was. It didn't really matter that the numbers; it was just the quantity, just the time spent with.
I'm that way with birthdays now.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
We did write backwards down the number line, so I guess that
right. And Ryan, what about, like, formative memories for you? I mean, were you hooked after the first Jones Beach show, or
I was, like I said, hooked. I guess my first hook was just. Literally, when Hoist came out, and I was recording in the Cultsmer Harbor Studios, and we started doing some recordings, some off takes of Hoist and things like that with a couple of my bandmates, and then we went to the shows in '95, and from then on in, it was all in. I did Clifford Ball, I did Lemon Wheel, I did all the festivals. Mm-hmm. As I was in, it was in high school. For me, so it's pretty easy, as opposed to now. Responsibilities to be
it's
had.
It's a little more complicated.
Yeah, I did all the big festivals. Have many great stories to share, but the festivals probably really were my first. That was when it really started to matter.
Yeah,
for me.
And I think the Jones Beach David Bowie is something that people point to still as, like, a monumental jam. Like, it. It's up there, so...
It's up there. The first show was the first of the two Jones Beaches. They opened with Axlet 2, which, if Trey is listening, please bring it back. We love it. We love one, but, for me, that was my first live song I ever heard, and I still sing the lyrics to 2 every time I hear 1. They're both great, but it's...
Axlet 2, there's some weird history there where there was some thinking that the lyrics were objectionable to the first one, and that maybe with Hoist being, like, a little bit more of a chance of a breakout album, that they had to kind of tame down the lyrics. That was sort of my memory of it.
Right.
And Trey grabbed a less provocative, I don't know what the word is, offensive is probably the actual word, poem of mine, and adapted it into the same song, Axilla.
Summer Sitting by the Pool.
Yeah, Summer Sitting by the Pool, right.
Which sounds...
Was there a particular summer sitting by the pool moment when you wrote that? Or?
No, but I was just, maybe. But I was just sort of adding the historical footnote that perhaps Trey doesn't play it because he feels that it was also kind of like it's a sibling that didn't really deserve to be there in the first place, in a weird way.
That's an interesting...
We like both siblings.
Yeah, that's a good footnote. I was trying to lure Tom into telling songwriting stories, but...
Well, we're in the right place for luring to happen.
I know. Did you catch shows like that? Did you go to, like, random small shows in the early 90s, or were you...
Well, yeah, when I said earlier that I wasn't on tour, when Matt was on tour, that's wrong. I mean, but I would go
to shows.
I would hit them occasionally, yeah. I had things happening. 93 was... my first child. but no, I went to way earlier shows, of course, and back at Nectars and stuff like that.
And you would see them when you could?
I would see them whenever I could, yeah, for sure.
I can't imagine. I think most people listening can't imagine, like, walking into a place where there's 100 people or 50 people or 10 people or whatever and seeing Phish, especially because, like, Trey's playing at that time was just, like, he played so fast and so precise and, like, I don't know. I feel like people's minds would have just been blown, like, seeing a band like that just walking into a random concert.
I think they are, because Matt's one example, mm-hmm. Tom's another, and mm-hmm. that's why we're still here, mm-hmm. 20 years later, to, no pun intended.
No pun taken.
We're still talking about this.
So tell us a little bit about how you guys met and came to be Phish friends, or maybe Phish friends is how I would describe it.
So
it sounds like a weird, like, tell us how you became Phish friends, but
yeah.
It could be friends, but you,
friends.
With a PH,
yeah.
But you can't say that on a podcast.
Exactly. Phish friends.
So Matt and I met, Matt's wife and I went to high school together, and I guess it was 2009-ish. they had a summer party, and we had come over there. I'd never met Matt before, and this was right after the Camden shows. And was it Camden?
It was Camden. Maybe 2010, but
yeah, 2010 possibly. And so Matt was hosting the party. Probably had about 80 people there. We were the first people to arrive in a party I didn't really want to go to in the first place. And I came up to him and I said, "Listen, sorry, I may be a little slow today. I was at a concert last night. I'm not sure if you heard of the band before. It was Fish, and I guess our wives say that doves started flying from our ears the second I said that, because I'm telling this to a guy who's back in 2010 or whatever had already seen, you know, well over 200 Fish shows. And I guess it was, like our wife says, love at first sight from a Fish perspective. Subsequently, we've been best friends ever since then.
Amazing.
And thanks to Fish.
Yeah, did you, in the same town or near the same, in the same area, right?
Yeah, so Matt grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in Long Island. He moved to Long Island because, you know, lost the battle with the wife, and I was from there. And we, you know, live in the same town, and that's how we met at that night.
I would just assume that before that, like, if Fish people are within a certain radius of each other, just like
they find each other.
Yeah,
well, we did.
I mean, I guess that is what happened.
That was the first thing I ever said to him, I guess. But
there was no online meeting first, because I've met so many people online that I'd then meet in person because of Fish, but I feel like it's rarely the opposite these days, but maybe that's more of a me thing. I don't know. Yeah.
You're just always online.
I think it goes back to Jones Beach again, and I think our first show may have been Jones Beach, and then we hit Camden, which is one of my most memorable shows, June 10, 2011. It was just a fantastic show. As a matter of fact, when I saw Trey, I met Trey at a Neil Young show at Radio City, and
nice.
Ended up chatting for. We bumped into him at set break because we were sitting a row apart, and we had a great 20-minute conversation. And I brought up that June 10, 11 show with him at Camden. It was just perfection. Curtin Withe is a huge one of my favorites, and if you guys go back and listen to 6, 10, 11, Curtin Withe, they closed the first set that night.
We should put it on right now.
Yeah,
it's absolutely flawless.
Let's play a little bit of that right now.
That is really great.
So, guys, Matt, you've been seeing shows since 91, Ryan since 95. Do you guys have favorite eras now, or do you jump all around? It's something I always ask people because I think we get, like, very strong and divergent opinions.
I'm probably in too much of a habit of listening to shows that I've been to.
Mm.
But
Across eras,
yeah. But I kind of, you know, I'll have like streaks of a week or a month or something like that where I'll kind of concentrate on, you know, the 90s and mid-90s, and I'll pivot to, you know, 2014, something like that. It's not deliberate. I think it's just maybe out of exhaustion. But I need to be doing a better job of listening to things which I have not been doing. I was reading something about, I'm forgetting his name, but it was a Grateful Dead fan who endeavored to listen to every show available in order.
Jesse Jenna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ambitiously tried doing that with Fish shows. I think I made it to like 1990.
Yeah. You're like, I gotta skip forward. it's an incredible task. I think Jesse's like in the late 70s now. He's still doing it.
Wow.
Yeah, he's still doing it.
Of the Dead.
Of the Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Not of Fish, because they didn't start
the Fish. He's in the late 70s Fish stuff, which is basically Tom and Trey. And
yeah, there's some really good stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard to find, though.
That's fair. What about you?
I think for me, also going back to playing in a band as well and knowing when these songs are created, you know, when a song gets created in the first place, and you got to obviously appreciate the early years and the beginnings, because without that, you wouldn't have anything. And, you know, my first show being 95, I'm obviously a huge fan of the late 90s. And also, I also think 2011, after they came back from hiatus in 09, I think 2011 was the inflection point of 3.0 that just did it for me. And I think if I was to guess, my opinion, any year of Fish, that's maybe the most underrated year where I think it's more impressive than maybe people are talking about, would be 2011. It goes back to that, and I think that's when really they started hitting their stride. They've had 2 years back from the hiatus, 2 years of practicing together, and I think that's why we're at where we are now, with just this, you know, the Baker's Dozen, the magnificent play from these guys, and the fact that they've been together the whole time. 2011 is an important year for me, because I think that's where they really started taking off at 3.0.
Yeah, I guess there's the early part of that year was the Bethel shows right at the beginning, mm-hmm. the end of May. But I think most people think of like Dick's 2012 as like the beginning of,
right. That's so what I was like saying. I think there were certainly some pockets. I'd suggest to you fans to go back and, like I said, the June show, mm-hmm. and in 2011, there's a lot of great hidden gems, I will say, because they're not talked about as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's something I don't listen to quite as much as like late 2012 onward.
I don't necessarily have, you know, eras per se. I do have moments, you know, and I remember, for example, that Sugarbush show in 94, the Antelope that opened the second set, and, you know, just the antics that were going on throughout that, whatever, 18 to 20 minutes.
That was the catapult, right? In the middle of the Antelope, and it was right before Trey's wedding, and there was, like, Fishman harassing him about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's, like, special.
And so
you were there.
Yeah, well, I was there. And then, you know, and as I said earlier, you know, there's the show, two shows prior was the Big Bird show, which was similarly, you know, like, holy, the second set of that show was just really wacky. Super memorable. And that one was not necessarily small in the hundreds, but maybe it was, like, you know, 1,000 or 2,000, I don't even know, small tent and base of the mountain there at the Big Bird ski resort. So really good memories, but more kind of discreet than, say, full, you know, years or generations.
So cool that you were there. One of the ongoing things, one of my co-hosts, Brad, who I started this podcast with, there was this one audience recording of Sugarbush 94 where I think Trey's in telling a story. Maybe it's during that whole thing. And you can hear this guy in the background go, "In Vermont, you do what you want." And it's just like this funny thing that just like, it's so clear on the tapes, and it's something that we still say to each other. But those are like, you know, there's someone over by the tapers just screaming, and the tapers are probably like, "Fuck, man, you're ruining my whole thing." But that's really cool that you were there and you were at some of those really, really cool moments.
Were you that guy?
I didn't know this coming out tonight.
That's it. That's the whole point. You know, we gotta get you to admit. So guys, so let's talk a little bit about Lure Social again, LUREsocial.com, which people should check out if they haven't yet. We started this podcast 5 years ago as a way to kind of appreciate the community, give back to the community, however you want to think about it. And since then, and before us, of course, there have been lots of websites and blogs. And Kelly Morris, who's been on Tom's podcast, her More project with the videos. There's so many great fan appreciation things, not to even to start to get into the art and all the things that have been created around the Fish scene. But you guys took a sort of different approach in terms of Lure, which is based on fantasy gaming. And I'm curious to hear just like how the idea came together and how you guys came to start it.
What is it, first of all? Why don't you describe it to us?
Yeah, so look, I'm going to get there, but I'm going to give you the long answer intentionally. Ryan alluded to his, you know, our appreciation for music does extend beyond Fish. You know, I recall my first concert ever in 1985 at Giant Stadium, seeing Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band that Born in the USA tour. And,
oh, nice.
That's awesome.
You know, you have these moments which are really, you know, they form just unbelievable impressions and create memories. And now to your question, A few years ago, at the end of the New Year's run, which just happened to kind of coincide with playoff football and the kind of end of truth of the playoff football season, we're like, man, two of the things which we really like, you know, seeing fish and watching football are coming to an end. And that's unfortunate. And we're also simultaneously reflecting on, you know, how the music industry has evolved over time. If you think about the construct, you know, say, you know, 60s, 70s, where artists largely were compensated, or their legitimacy and relevance was predicated on album sales, right? Your platinum, double platinum, whatever it is. And if you fast forward to today, or, you know, shortly after the time we were having this discussion at the end of whatever New Year's show it was, but, you know, around that time, I feel like you two had just given away an album on Apple Music. And, you know, we all know what happened with Napster years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
But what that revealed is that, you know, the construct of going into a studio and recording an album, it still matters. But that's really, from an artist's perspective, that's not necessarily a money-making proposition. What is performing. And, of course, you know, artists do that, some with terrific success. And even just stepping aside or stepping away from jam bands, if you look at the success that like a Taylor Swift has, or you know, you name, you know,
the Bieber,
like a huge country star, you know, that's really an unbelievable endeavor. And there's theatrics, and there's like really, really, really dedicated fan bases which go to those shows with some regularity. But what we all, you know, we've talked about it earlier. We've seen Fish and other bands like Fish with some regularity, and we have no reservations about going a few nights in a row. But I think the proposition of going to see, I've never seen Taylor Swift, but I think the proposition of going to see her three nights in a row is really not one which I want to entertain. but probably because nights two and three are the same as night one. And, you know, there's no
That's not the only reason you don't want to go see her.
Well, yeah.
I have a daughter, and I took her to Taylor Swift, and my seats were too good, and I kind of looked around and realized I was the only like dad standing anywhere near the stage, and finally realized that there was like a dad retreat area. And I like went back to all the other dads. Finally, a guy goes, "I was wondering when you were going to come here." I was in the wrong place. But you're right. My daughter even would admit that there was like one slot for one different song, but all the others were the same.
That's right. Whereas, you know, one of the things that we love about Fish is that no show is ever the same. And that began to lend itself to this discovery of, you know, what can we do to heighten our engagement, heighten our enjoyment. And, you know, that kind of, again, dovetailed with the end of the football season.
And the fantasy football season.
And fantasy football mm-hmm. season. And, you know, so there was a few months of discovery and frankly some batting around of ideas which got us to Lore Social as it stands today.
I'd say just to dovetail and continue on Matt's comments, we enjoyed playing fantasy football so much because we love football, we love the unknown outcomes of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, well, why don't we try to do something a little more formal. Obviously people have done this on kind of back of the envelope with their two or three or five best friends around tour. What do you think they're going to open with? What do you think they might play tonight? But we wanted to do a, more serious dive into, you know, how we can gamify this. And really, for the exclusive reason of having fun around a band that we love.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we probably spent about 2 months coming up with a point-based, derivative-based scoring around a show. So if you go to loresocial.com, you can encourage you guys to sign in, check it out. We're obviously we're going to be doing the whole Fish tour. We've got a couple mini tours within this particular 2018 summer tour run. You can jump in and out whenever you like, but there'll be a cumulative scoring totals for the entire run for the summer tour 18, and we'll also be running games for the Curveball Festival and also the Dix Run. So
nice.
You can play as many or as little as you want, but you know, there are, you can, you know, you can, compete for those three particular mini tours, if you will. And when you do log in, maybe we can tell you guys about
it. Yeah. Walk us through it. And if anyone listening is on there, is not driving or doing anything else dangerous, you can log on to luresocial.com.
Operating a crane?
Yeah.
Don't operate a crane while on luresocial.com.
We have actually a lot of crane operator listeners. It's actually like one of our specific demographics. But so log on to luresocial.com. You create an account, and then what happens from there? How do you
Like I said, we can start with the tour opener. You can go in and click on all the shows are there, so you could, not that you would put in, you know, your lineup for every show. You'd start with the first one, obviously, and see how you do.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the first show of the tour is always very challenging because you have the entire catalog to deal with. So what we would say is don't be discouraged after the first show, because even professionals such as Tom or ourselves or RJ, don't get down and out for the first show. There's just so many options.
I would just call Trey and find out.
Oh, yeah.
Are you allowed to play? Because you can actually swing.
Well, Trey claims that he makes up the set list, so
we'll see. We'll see how well you do. Tom is not a set list guy, but if he starts winning, then we'll know.
We're gonna have to kick him off if he starts winning. But in all seriousness, so the construct of when you log in, you've got, it mirrors a typical Phish show, so two sets with an encore. So when you log in, you can select two openers, two closers, an encore, two cover songs, a long jam, a deep cut, which would be a song that hasn't been played in 25 to 74 shows. So, you know, it occurs with somewhat regularity, but not every night. A bust out, which would be a song that hasn't been played in 75 or more shows. And then you have four rotation songs, which are just, you know, songs you think they may play that night.
Would a bust out also fulfill a deep cut if you put them both in the same slot?
It would not. There's actually, we've got a logic built into the site which does not permit that.
It doesn't allow that.
Yes.
Okay.
So you can't put a non-bust out into a bust out song in the slot.
Okay. Oh, it figures out that. Okay, so people like me who aren't really up on the stats would be guided by Lure's logic.
Well, exactly. And so to that point, you can, if you click on, for anyone participating at home and checking this out as we go, if you click on the Find a Song icon there, you'll see a research section which reveals the last time a song was played, the gap between the last play, and will also kind of guide you to, you know, whether it's a cover, a deep cut, or a bust out.
So it sort of helps you make intelligent decisions.
Exactly. It doesn't let you
it helps you foul. It helps guide you. But as for the derivative based scoring, you can put something as an opener. If you hit it as an opener, it's 6 points. If you don't, but they still play it that night, you still get points. So it's only three. And for the deep cuts, it's 9. For the bust outs, it's 15. For the covers, it's 4.5. We did, like I said, Matt and I did pretty extensive research on how often songs are played or how often they're not played, and we ran dry runs for hypothetical shows and figured out a point-based scoring system that we think really works out well. We've been we've had this site live for a couple of years, albeit we're launching in a bigger way now. But the point scoring system really works well. We haven't had any complaints about the fairness of it.
Is there a deadline before the show where you have to have your choices selected?
There is, yeah. So as Ryan suggested, there's you have access to enter your set list in advance of the show, but we'll close, the window, so to speak, closes generally an hour in advance of the show start.
Okay.
Between an hour and a half an hour. You know, we realize that people have busy schedules and, you know, it's not 1 minute
books,
before the show. Yeah, I mean, you can. There's a
scheduler, you know.
Yeah, if you click into a particular show, you can actually see a countdown clock that will count down until the show closes down. It's typically, like Matt said, we'll try to give them within a half an hour. We don't want to get too cute in case, you know, Trey and the boys decide to come on a little bit earlier. Obviously, we know they like their 8:10-ish, 8:15 kind of time slot traditionally for whatever time zone it is. But
yeah.
We realize that people have busy schedules and they're going to the show and they want to play as well, but we don't want to shut them out. So we try to keep it as close to as we can without, you know, running into the show opening time.
So if you choose an encore, that's also a cover. Like, could Good Times, Bad Times fulfill both, or how does that work?
It only works for the slot in which you placed it.
Okay.
But as Ryan's suggesting, you know, there's the scoring for an encore is different than it is for a cover.
Okay.
So
so like Yahtzee, you have to be very discriminating about where you choose to place your star quarterback.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Not at all like Yahtzee, but yeah.
So if you play night by night, do people like if I, which I probably will, like hit a bunch of stuff on the first night. I'm just kidding, I won't at all. But like, then do you carry over? Because I know it goes throughout the tour, but also you can play each night differently.
Cumulative?
So is it cumulative or is it show by show or does it depend?
As I mentioned before, we have many tour subsets within tours. So for this particular 18 tour, we're going to have the proper 2018 running up until a curveball. So there'll be a cumulative base scoring winners.
Cool.
And you know, if you like, if that's too much for you to start, and you want to play against your friends, let's say you guys are just going to Harvey's, you're welcome to play for that night, and you know, compete against your friends for that night, and stop playing. We'd encourage you to keep playing, but there'll be cumulative base winners throughout the tour.
Cool.
So we encourage you to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say though. We've you know established that there are three night runs kind of warrant discrete mini tours as well as in addition to the whole tour itself. But you know if you're interested in establishing a more discrete tour with your friends, you know, hit us up. There's a contact page at the bottom, and you know, in addition to that feedback, we welcome any other.
That's really cool. And so if anyone thinks that, well, people who haven't done this, and I've done it informally with friends at, you know, shows, and we write on the back of envelopes and things. But for people who think it's easy, I was just listening to the first show of the 2017 summer tour from Northerly Island, and I didn't realize until I went back yesterday and listened to the show that it, What's the Use was the opener, which is like, I mean,
that can't happen.
How would you like possibly guess that? So it's fun. It's fun but difficult.
Yeah, our thought process on that maybe was that. Who's Trey or the band, kind of giving a nod to maybe people like us or like what's the use, as we know, as we all fans of the band, these guys always keep us on our toes, and I kind of thought that was a subconscious nod to the people that are always trying to call the openers, and to a bigger degree us saying, what is the use in trying to call this, and we're going to really screw with you because they
don't even try.
There's one thing that the boys love doing is playfully having fun with us fans. So
I love doing the entire Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon.
Well, that was
after Vegas.
Yeah,
glad I went to Vegas
when they played What's the Use. I actually had a big smile on my face because I took it almost as not to us and anybody else trying to call the opener. So,
yeah,
openers are becoming harder to call.
That's great. Axel at 2 might be the right call for this tour opener.
Well, that would be a bust out for sure.
So I hope there's monetary prizes for winning the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, there aren't. That's a good question, actually. There aren't monetary prizes, but there are prizes, and we've had prizes from kind of merchandise, posters, shirts, stuff of that nature, but also just tickets. So
we've given away tickets to shows for future shows. So hypothetically, if you win the summer tour, we will.
Give away tickets for
three nights of Taylor Swift.
If you come in last, we force you to go to a show you don't want to go to. But no, in all seriousness, we've had partners in the past that we'd like to reconnect with. Whether it's Fish merchandise, Funk Your Face is one that they've been really great with us, and they've been done giveaways for shades for Fit, the donut shades that you guys all see and love on tour. So. We'll be announcing that as tour comes a little bit closer.
Yep.
But there are goodies and grab bag items to win. And if, like Matt said before, if there are particular things or sites, or if you're a vendor yourself and you'd like to be involved, certainly hit us up. It's Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at Lure Social, and Matt at Lure Social as well. We'd be more than happy to work with other people in the community. We've spoken and worked with a lot of you in the past, and if we haven't, we'd encourage you to reach out to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys have been doing the Fish tours for 3+ years, and you've been doing it with other bands. And we're obviously, we encourage people to check it out and play this summer. We're going to be doing a partnership through Osiris and HF Pod and Under the Scales and a couple of our other podcasts, where we're going to be, you're going to be hearing a little bit more about Lure Social, but we're going to also, on our quick hits that we'll do for HF Pod, for I think this will be the third or fourth year in a row we've been doing the quick hits, every morning after the show we'll give a quick update of how people are doing and standings and all that, and we're excited to kind of, you know, expose our listeners to this and hope people get involved, because it's really cool and it's fun, and I think it's like a really user-friendly way for people to get involved and, you know, compete against friends and sort of share in the groove in another interesting way.
Yeah, look, I would say beyond just the gaming, which you see on here today, if you're checking it out, a couple of things have come from the origination, the ideation, and the development here is, and the participation is that, you know, one, there's you'll see by virtue of the number of users today, that there's a community, it's emerging, it's growing, and this game is really just truthfully like the tip of the iceberg in terms of ways in which, you know, bands can engage bands. You know, we think that there's the prospect here that it creates kind of a heightened engagement with the band when you're seeing them, with your friends and attending. Conceivably, bands if can inform you know, audience participation or you know, how they're thinking about it. And we've seen that probably more in some other bands who've reached out to us to want to put themselves on the site for their fans' participation. But there's clearly an emergence or a trend that we're moving towards in terms of like a communal aspect of beyond just gaming, which it's uniting, but it also, depending upon the manner in which you're doing it, can be a little divisive if you have a fan who's you're engaging and competing against.
Are you guys implying that you're trying to figure out other ways of engaging this fan base? Now that you've kind of got our attention, you're going to introduce other games, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. So what you see on there today is really just the first concept, which we've brought to market, and there are others which we are developing today. And in addition, as I said, you know, there are other bands. You look back, you can see some of the bands that we've brought onto the site and people have gamed on. There are others which we'll be bringing on. If you have, for people participating and listening today, if there are bands which, you know, you know, you're in a band or you follow a band and you think it would work well here, please let us know. And then in addition to just the gaming, as I suggested, that there's a real communal aspect which is emerging from this. And, you know, there's going to be derivations or kind of opportunities to create, you know, alternatives to kind of the fan-band interaction.
Enhance the crowd experience and exactly. Enhance the band experience, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
There's some powerful ideas that I can't quite grasp, but smart people like you guys can. I'm sure you're working on it.
Yeah, you'll be, without giving too much away, you'll be seeing more from us in the future, for sure.
That's great.
We've got a lot of great new ideas. Like Matt said, I think it's the fan-to-band engagement, and it's the tip of the iceberg. We've got more games, per se, that are slightly different from the ones we've explained and that are on the site now. We've also kind of bigger picture ideas that
I like that
you'll be seeing down the road from us, for sure.
You guys now are sponsors of Osiris, but then you've also mentioned, turning it the other way, that you guys have sponsors, in a sense, the people who provide the prizes and stuff, and you'd like to be in touch with more of them. But also, as your fan base grows, that's another dynamic. But then the other one that we kind of haven't talked about, you've alluded to, is there's other bands as well. And you were mentioning before that you did a lot of research on Phish's particular fingerprint as to when they play a song and how often it's been played and all that stuff. I imagine that kind of research is completely unique band by band. So you can't do that same kind of analytics on Dave Matthews that you have done with Phish.
Well, to be honest, when we crank the numbers, if you will, with Phish, you'd actually be surprised, because back in 2015, we were looking at Pearl Jam, for example, which we've tested on the site as well, and their tour, which was similar to Phish's tour at the time, was about 22 shows. You know, we cranked up a bunch of different ways to look at, you know, the song selection, uniqueness of the song selection, the amount of songs played, the covers. If our we had a proprietary model that came up with an end score for it, and I was shocked and appalled. But Pearl Jam actually had a very similar numbers to Phish, actually slightly more from the derivative of songs played.
People have said that to me, that if you've Pearl Jam is very similar.
Yes.
Pearl Jam actually, for a few tours, if you go back to 15, 14, 13, the way we looked at it in our proprietary models, they actually had a slightly higher number than Phish for the score, for our scores.
The way you
scored it. Surprising.
Right.
The way I scored it, but we were looking at amount of songs played, times played, you know.
Right. There's some magic number that Trey was trying to attain and keep beating every year, which was the most unique songs played per year.
Right. I think they hit 200 that one tour. That was the tour that did all the covers.
It might be 251 or something is a magic number that sticks in my head. I don't know if like Pearl Jam could beat that, for example. I was thinking there was no band that could possibly beat it, but then I think someone had brought up Pearl Jam.
Well, it was the tour where they played Skin It Back as an opener in Jones Beach. I think we were at that show. I think that was 2012 or possibly where they came out saying they wanted to do over 200 different shows, and that would probably be the song. Sorry.
Anyway, you don't have to be song geeks like we're talking. We're geeking out right now. You don't have to be song geeks to enjoy your guys' game.
Yeah, that's right, Tom. And to your other point about the, you know, the constructs for other bands, we've had Mo on here, we've had Humphreys McGee on here, and a handful of others. And,
oh, good.
And each one is unique. We have looked at it. And in consideration, for example, of Humphreys, you know, there's the sandwich convention where you have like a song segment, other songs back, and the song it started from. And if, in gaming on Humphreys, you have the opportunity to reflect those sandwich, you know, predictions, if you will, in here on Lore.
Because that's unique to them.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. There are certainly a base case that is similar, but there's also, like Matt alluded to, some of like an Humphreys with the sandwich. So there are little idiosyncratic differences amongst the bands that we can tailor fit depending on who the band we're talking about is.
Nice. So you guys have run the numbers on all these different bands.
We've run a lot of numbers on a lot of bands.
Song geeks.
Yeah. Well, so we're gonna leave the audience with a little bit of the show from 5/19/91 from the Salisbury School, which was Matt's first show, because I think that seems appropriate given that was the show you started with. But yeah, we're looking forward to hearing more from you guys and to talking more about Lure as summer tour progresses. So we encourage people to check out Lure Social, LureSocial.com, and sign up and play. And maybe you can beat Tom at guessing songs.
I'll be playing, and I'll be angry if you beat me.
Well, thank you guys for having us on, and we're super excited about the partnership that Lure's initiating and vice versa with
Yeah,
Osiris.
Thank you for sponsoring Osiris.
Yep. She'll be hearing more from, I guess, both of us in the future.
And it'll be a couple weeks until tour when this comes out, so people should start signing up and get your song choices in. Thanks, Ryan and Matt, for coming on and sharing a little bit about your history, but also about this cool project you guys created.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Forward progression. Happy birthday to Josh.
We love you, Josh.
So is anybody keeping score here at the tally? How many Pomfret students have actually...
have actually seen the headmaster's office?
Removed.
They get caught there a lot, huh?
What time is it anyway? There's still some time left.
I'll send this out to anyone in the headmaster's office.
Fuck your face. Thank you.
not a question. Just like Roger, he's a crazy little kid. I've got the time if you've got the inclination. So cheer up, Palmer, you'll soon be dead. The noose is hanging, at least you won't die wondering. Sit up and take notice, don't tell it like it is. If I were near you, I wouldn't be far from you. I've got a feeling you know what you did. We'll be right back.
cool shade of a banana tree, on the rugged trail toward the balcony. Child of the 20th century, a dried up Goliath and a weasel made me. Far away in another place, a fading beauty named Millie Grace. A gospel singer with pox on her face and a bamboo cane to help her keep the peace. He was a foolish prodigy, long past the age of maturity. Someday he knew it was set it free, like it did for Floyd, the chimpanzee. Was jumping like a kangaroo, like a beast in a cage, an old Dutch zoomer, hopping and jumping and flipping and shooting. But Floyd was jealous and alone. He wanted to live for his own. A desperate screaming in his bones. In love, he said, I will not condone. Then one day on a ship to Quebec, Floyd found Fiorelli on a lover's trek. Picked up a bottle and broke off the neck. He sliced to the air and he hit the deck. Fingertip. Billy said, boy.